Aalto University Podcast.
Hydrogen has been used in many industries for a long time, but the hydrogen has been grey, that is, produced from fossil fuels. Replacing grey for green hydrogen in industrial uses could reduce carbon emissions greatly, and doing that seems like the lowest hanging fruit for advancing the hydrogen economy. But how low does it actually hang? I'm Mikko Heiskala, a visiting researcher at the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University, Finland. I research digital platforms and ecosystems. I was looking at how these could help hydrogen economy take off and what Hydrogen Valleys had to do with it in the Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project. But to do that, I had to move away from my comfort zone of digital and bits to a world of atoms, molecules and electrons to understand the emerging hydrogen economy and what makes it tick. Join me on this journey in the Hydrogen Valley podcast. The plastic industry is one of the industries that uses grey hydrogen today. I invited Mikko Rönkä from Borealis to discuss what replacing grey hydrogen in their business would mean and if there is anything that is holding them back from doing so. Mikko is a
asset transformation manager in company Borealis.
Could you begin by briefly introducing what Borealis, your company, does and its core business?
Borealis is a plastic producer. It's a European company. Headquarters are in Vienna, Austria. And we are making polyethylene and polypropylene plastics, the most commonly used plastics in the world. And we in Finland, we have a production facilities in Kilpilahti in Porvo. And we have around 900 employees in Finland.
And how and where hydrogen then fits into your operations today?
Well, we are no stranger to hydrogen even today. So we produce hydrogen. It's a side product of our processes. So we produce hydrogen, we use hydrogen, we also export a bit of hydrogen. Today we are directly using hydrogen in hydrogenation reactors. They are used to modify the raw materials. They are used to remove the impurities, which would be catalyst poisons elsewhere. And in the polyolefin production processes, hydrogen is used to modify the properties of the polyolefins.
Can you elaborate a bit more on why hydrogen is so critical to your operations?
Those impurities, what we remove with the hydrogenation, they are basically catalyst poisons. So even the small amounts, we are talking about ppm levels, parts per million levels, are killing the polyolefin manufacturing catalysts. So we have to remove them completely, and that's why we use hydrogenation reactors, and there the hydrogen, of course, and high purity hydrogen is a key ingredient.
And you mentioned that you produce hydrogen. Was it as a side stream of your processes or?
It is a side stream of the processes. Mm. So we utilize different raw materials, typically fossil. We can use circular and renewable raw materials, but majority today is fossil. And those raw materials are cracked. We are trying to, or making ethylene and propylene. And when we crack the raw materials, we get basically a cocktail of different materials. The main materials are ethylene and propylene, but there is a significant hydrogen side stream which we are separating and purifying in our process.
Could you explain what cracking means?
Cracking is basically splitting the hydrocarbon chains to smaller chains, and in our case, we want selectively get ethylene and propylene out. And in cracking, we basically, in a specific reactor called cracking furnace, we heat up the hydrocarbon stream to a high temperature, about 850 degrees, where the cracking starts. And right after the cracking, we very fastly cool it down back to 100 degrees to stop the reactors.
Mm-hmm. What changes or what would change if you switch to green hydrogen in the operations you describe? I understood that you currently are using the fossil-based gray hydrogen.
Well, I think in the production process itself, nothing much would change. Still, the amounts of hydrogen we are using are rather moderate. The green hydrogen would play much bigger role in the future economy, where we could have basically two major additional uses of hydrogen. And the one of those is linked to raw material handling. So we could switch to fully synthetic raw materials. And making those synthetic raw materials would require a lot of hydrogen, and preferably green hydrogen. So that is the one path. And also processing recycled raw materials like recycled plastics, that requires hydrotreatment to control the properties and remove the impurities. Also processing renewable raw materials, typically renewable-based raw materials contain a lot of oxygen, and we don't want oxygen in our process. So hydrogenation reactions are used to remove that oxygen. Then another use where hydrogen could have a role is remove the CO2 emissions. So we are today combusting methane gas in our furnaces, and replacing that with hydrogen would basically eliminate CO2 emissions.
Can you explain hydrogenation process as well?
Well, basically hydrogenation happens typically in a controlled pressure and temperature. Depending on the process, the temperature can be slightly elevated, or in some cases significantly higher than the normal pressure. And then there is typically a catalyst involved. And then together in the right conditions with the right catalyst, the hydrogen acts there to remove the impurities. Typical hydrogenation reaction we have is removal of acetylene. Acetylene is a side product of cracking, and that's one of the poisons, and that's the kind of a triple bond. And with the hydrogen, the one of the bonds is broken, and we convert the poison acetylene to ethylene, which is the valuable raw material.
So I've understood hydrogen is really a very reactive element as such. So you are basically using that characteristics of hydrogen to connect to different molecules in the cracking process to remove them from the stuff that you want to do.
Yes, correct.
From a technical and economic perspective, what do you see as the main challenges from switch, if you would be, and as you are willing to switch from gray to green hydrogen?
The biggest challenge is the economics. So in plastics industry currently, there are no mandates that would drive directly to the green hydrogen utilization. So all is currently based on customer willingness to pay premiums on the products that are manufactured using green hydrogen. You can basically build business based on certain customers, but of course, typically these processes utilizing green hydrogen are very capital intensive. They also have a high operating cost. So to really have a long-term view and a long-term development to invest in these technologies would require then a supportive regulation.
So if I understood correctly, from the technical viewpoint, it would not be a big deal, a big issue to switch. It's just hydrogen, at least in your main processes.
Many of those, that's true. So the processes we are using today, of course, they don't care if the hydrogen is green or any other color. For the raw material, synthetic raw materials, most of the manufacturing technologies have been existing already decades. Decades. So the biggest hindrance there is the economics. Using hydrogen as a fuel, there is still some room to develop to go really 100% hydrogen firing in certain areas. But that is, already pretty close to reality, and to levels of 90% hydrogen firing are already achievable.
Yeah, and you mentioned you are using furnaces,
yes,
which need fuel to get the temperature up. So,
yes, yes, indeed.
What would then make green hydrogen adoption more viable or even attractive in your industry?
The challenge in our industry is that the fossil raw materials have been used almost 100 years. And all the production technologies, production processes has been fully optimized to utilize those raw materials. Mm. So fossil manufacturing route has a very long head start in front of it. Mm. And any competing technology has a big challenge to catch that head start there. And what would be needed is really, I already mentioned the mandates and regulation, but then also what is needed is innovation. And we need to develop these synthetic and hydrogen-based routes to be more effective. Mm. There is hope. The production processes involve several steps, and one way is to bypass some of the steps. Bypass cracking, produce directly ethylene with some novel technologies and similar breakthroughs.
How do you see the role of sector integrations or other new opportunities for your business and your industry to make this economic equation more attractive?
Certainly. One good example of the sector, potential sector integration, and actually we are already utilizing that in a small scale, is that when sustainable aviation fuel, synthetic sustainable aviation fuel is produced, the main product, of course, is aviation fuel, but there is a naphtha fraction, which is a gasoline fraction, which we can utilize in our processes directly. Mm. And this kind of utilizing each side product where they fit the best is one of the good examples of the sector integration.
Yeah.
Also, another example is the hydrogen networks. Mm. So having the hydrogen networks connecting the producers and the consumers will bring down the hydrogen cost and then make the utilization of hydrogen more efficient.
So it's getting, as you are now producing it yourself, just getting the raw material from the market that needs a hydrogen pipeline network.
That requires a hydrogen pipeline, and it's not only the hydrogen pipeline, but it can be connected together with the natural gas pipeline and potentially also the CO2 pipelines in the future and making kind of a network of the important energy and waste stream pipelines would help the industry to utilize this.
Mm. And I understood also that you are already rather closely located with some of those potential sector integration partners also for the future.
Yes, we are, of course, in the Kilpilahti industrial area, which is one of the major industrial area in the Nordics. And in that sense, the sector integration is not a stranger to us. We have a lot of streams coming back and forth from our neighbors.
Mm. Okay, so you're currently using gray hydrogen, so that gray hydrogen produced from fossil raw materials. But you are also exploring replacing it with green hydrogen. So why is that? We've been mentioned quite a few challenges here.
Well, for me, I think it's ultimately a question of survival of the industry in Europe. In Europe, we don't have a lot of raw materials. We don't have a cheap workforce. We have pretty old and small plants.
Mm.
So we have to find ways how we can compete in the future with the raw materials we already have today within Europe. And there I see that the hydrogen is a key molecule to help to protect our industry and kind of develop new sustainable manufacturing here.
After my discussion with Mikko Ranka, I wanted to know more about replacing gray hydrogen with green in industrial uses, and there are no bigger than ammonia production It accounts for roughly half of global hydrogen use. So I invited Veera Kiiskinen from Green North Energy, which is setting up a green ammonia production plant in Nantali, Finland, to discuss their plant and plans with me. She is a
project and development lead at Green North Energy.
How hydrogen and ammonia are interrelated?
Well, if we think about the chemics, ammonia is NH3, so essentially it's hydrogen plus nitrogen.
So in ammonia, there's a lot of hydrogen. So is the ammonia then produced?
So the conventional, which is currently used process, we take the hydrogen from natural gas and put it into the Haber-Bosch process and take nitrogen from air with the air separation unit. And then we get ammonia, and we call that ammonia, gray ammonia currently in the discussions, because natural gas has a lot of CO2 emissions.
So basically to make ammonia, we just need air and hydrogen.
Yeah. And our process, since we want to make green hydrogen with using the renewables, we take water to get the hydrogen. So basically water, air, and we get the so-called green ammonia.
Okay. Could you then tell me a bit about your company and its core business, what you do?
Yes, we are quite a small startup. Actually, our story began in late 2020, early 2021, when Neste shut down its oil refinery in Naantali. And there were actually hundreds of people losing their jobs. And Elomatic, which is a engineering company based in Turku, had actually locals in Naantali, and they started thinking that how could the site be utilized since there was these operations being shut down. And hydrogen came to their mind. However, back then, the hydrogen hype was not yet happening in Finland. So that's why they actually had to start this business on their own, because they couldn't find any partnerships who wanted to do it back then. So the idea was to produce hydrogen, but quite quickly when they were trying to find use cases for it, again, it was quite tricky. And actually they had this idea that they wanted to use hydrogen for the archipelago ferries. And there were actually new ferries being acquired, which were not using hydrogen. So they realized that the hydrogen for the ferries was not happening within the next upcoming years. So ammonia came into the picture because it has the existing markets, and that was seen as an advantage that we wanted to exploit.
So what do you do then?
Currently, we are focusing on our flagship plant, which is coming in Naantali, and the size of it that we are currently exploring, it's the hydrogen part would be 140 megawatts, which results in about 100,000 tons of ammonia annually. And however, we have done the permitting for the plant already, and the end goal has been to eventually double the capacity. So we would be talking about 200,000 tons of ammonia annually. And currently the market size for ammonia is slightly under 200 million tons. So with the full scale plant, we are talking about 0.1% of the whole market.
Yeah. But you're basically setting up a green hydrogen production plant and then a co-located ammonia production plant.
Yes, yes. And so the process would be first taking the water and electricity, producing hydrogen, and then that would be fed into the Haber-Bosch process to produce the ammonia eventually.
All right. So you mentioned you are planning as this kind of a stepwise expansion. Why?
So basically, there are two sides to this. We have been going back and forth with the size and with these ammonia plants or the green ammonia plants. The sizing is quite tricky because, of course, when we think about this hydrogen side, what we are currently talking about, the phase one being 140 megawatts, it's very huge. Currently in Finland, the Harjavalta plant is 20 megawatts. And there is no this scale plants being run currently. So we don't have the learnings, and we have to really think about how the technology would react being run like this. So When we look at the ammonia side, that is a very small plant. Currently, the gray ammonia plants are even 1 to 2 million tons annually. So when we've been talking about the ammonia licensors, the answer has been that they don't provide plants so small. However, that conversation has changed with even the 3 years that I've been with Green North Energy. And now the licensors are reacting to this demand coming from the green hydrogen side. So now even they have modules to produce this 100,000 tons of ammonia annually, which is, of course, easier now to scope the hydrogen side also a little bit smaller, because another constraint that we have is the electricity in the Naantali side. So currently we have the available power for this 140 megawatts. However, Fingrid is making improvements there. So in 2032, we should have the available power for the full-scale plant, so the 280 megawatts on the hydrogen side.
So it's ramping up the green electricity, getting enough of that. Then we need water, then we need air, and then we have to scale down the ammonia. You know, I got the impression the concrete machines
that
are currently used in the bigger plants on quite a bigger scale as well.
Yeah. And with ammonia, since it's a bulk product, you get the economies of scale the bigger you go.
Yeah.
So it's finding the balance of how big we can go with the hydrogen side and how big we can go with the investment and how small we can go on the ammonia side.
Yeah. So it's learning kind of two ways.
Yes.
As well.
Finding the balance.
Yeah, learning to scale the hydrogen production, the green hydrogen production, and then maybe, you know, scaling down a bit on the ammonia. Why ammonia then matters? Why are we talking about ammonia here?
Yeah, so basically ammonia is quite important to food production. Around 80% of the current global market is being used for fertilizers. So basically, the concern that we have as Europe currently is that a majority of ammonia has been imported from Russia. And so with the current geopolitical situation, that becomes a question of food security and security of maintenance, how we deal with that in the future. Besides this food security, ammonia or green ammonia can also be seen as a major climate lever. So a way to get the CO2 emissions down, because ammonia production currently is considered to be one of the so-called big four industrial emitters. So there we have the steel, cement, ethylene and ammonia. And ammonia is slightly under 2% of global emissions. So it can be compared to, for example, flight emissions.
So you mentioned there's not much production in Finland or in Europe.
Yeah, so gray ammonia is being imported. So Europe is important dependent on it. And with the green ammonia, there actually isn't any industrial scale production currently. So there are some pilot plants, but that is under 100,000 tons annually currently. So there are projects being developed, but not that many under construction yet.
So you mentioned that the original idea was to look at hydrogen for the ferries, so big boats, but then moving into ammonia. So is this the, if ammonia is currently used for fertilizers and different other industries, is it used for the boats currently?
No, and it was the small ferries, so between the archipelagos, how to transfer the cars there. But yes, not used for the boats currently. So like I mentioned, 80% currently goes to the fertilizers, but there are also current use cases in the industrial, for example, in textiles and synthetic fibers, such as nylons. Ammonia is used in cleaning agents and in pharmaceuticals. And you asked about these boats. So there are these emerging markets that are being speculated for ammonia. So the two big ones are to be used as maritime fuel, probably not in the ferries transporting people, but for example, shipping is something that is being speculated currently. And then one also speculation is to be used as this hydrogen carrier. So
what that means?
So we take the ammonia, which is a little bit easier to be transported compared to hydrogen, and then we ship it to, for example, Germany, where it's being cracked to be used as hydrogen again, for example, in the steel industry.
So cracking means taking the ammonia molecule NH4 and cracking it back to, splitting it back to nitrogen and hydrogen.
Exactly. So reversing the process.
So you mentioned that hydrogen is a bit difficult to transport, and that's why ammonia is considered as a hydrogen carrier.
Yes.
But then you have a co-located plant of hydrogen and ammonia. Is there a connection here?
Yeah, so basically when we have the co-located plants there, of course, it's a little bit more efficient process and there are less losses. And you don't have to transport the hydrogen long ways, so that minimizes the losses. But of course, you get optimization when these kind of plants are integrated. And one option could also, if you want to integrate also urea production within that plant, so ammonia can be used as raw material for urea production, and then you would also get a product that is even more easy to transport because it's in grain format.
Well, Green North Energy is not currently producing ammonia from gray hydrogen, but is instead moving directly into this using green hydrogen to produce then green ammonia. Could you discuss a bit about what this switch from gray to green in ammonia or hydrogen would mean for your potential customers or potential customers of ammonia products?
Yes, basically for the existing customers, so if we are not now talking about the emerging markets, but we are talking about the existing use cases, basically there it's not really about changing the products, it's about more about changing the sort of the carbon story and getting the emissions down. So for example, the fertilizers, which is the big use case, it's the same product, same molecule, but just lower a carbon footprint, which is, of course, good for brand and market differentiation.
And the planet.
And the planet, of course, and regulatory and ESG alignment. So hopefully one day the CBAM type pressures, so the carbon border mechanism type pressures and other regulations are moving our customers into that direction, that it's more sort of makes financially sense to be using these green products because ultimately, like you said, it's better for the planet.
So currently it's still a bit a question of the regulation to push the customers to this direction.
Yes, exactly. And there has been some negative advancements with that, with maybe the current political situations, some of these regulation and regulative decisions have been postponed a little bit. So like this carbon border mechanism, it's still a little bit unclear when the actual costs and the implications are being implemented. So the companies are, to my understanding, now monitoring it, but the actual costs and implications are pushed somewhere into the future. And of course, what would help us would be that if there is an cost for the carbon, and that cost would actually be in line with how harmful it is for the planet. But currently, some of our customers are even saying that they would rather pay these penalty fees rather than pay the green premium. So that is a little bit how the tone of the discussion is at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think there has been a switch in it from, for example, what it was 2 years ago. We had more fruitful discussions and our customers were seeing the advantages of paying the green premium previously. But now they are a little bit of hesitant and taking a look what's happening in the regulative field and in the markets.
So this would need a clear timetable from the regulatory side and when it starts to hit.
Yeah, yeah.
From the carbon emission side as well.
Yeah, and maybe also the political discussion needs to shift more towards what our planetary boundaries can handle and what's okay, because now I feel that the political discussion is shifting more towards that it's okay to emit. I don't feel that, but yeah. Unfortunately, that's a little bit how the situation has changed.
What would then be, from a technical viewpoint, this kind of a main challenges in switching to green hydrogen in ammonia production?
Yeah, so first of all, there is this size issue, like we discussed earlier. So how to match the sort of hydrogen production with the ammonia production. But then also, since the ammonia production likes to be run constantly 24/7,
mm-hmm.
and when we are producing hydrogen with the renewables, we know that it's not constant. If we want to use, for example, wind or solar power, there are times then when it's not windy or the sun is not shining. So there is this intermittency that we need to take into consideration. And that is, of course, difficult because we don't have these industrial scale plants running. So we don't have the learnings yet how the machines are reacting to this intermittency and what things we should take into consideration when designing these kind of new processes and plants. So I think those are the two main technical things to consider.
What about if I now think about a little bit about the future and maybe the existing gray ammonia sites? What's your opinion on how easy it would be to change those sites to a similar model as you are using, a co-located hydrogen and ammonia production plants? Is it about like just having the space where to put the hydrogen there and then, of course, the electricity and water inputs?
Yeah, I guess one thing would be that if there is this availability of the water, because that needs to be used as the raw material. But I know that most of these gray ammonia plants currently have been looking into producing this kind of blue ammonia, where they capture the CO2 from their process. So maybe that's a little bit more easier route for those producers.
So it would be easier to just retrofit the plants to capture the carbon emissions rather than for those sites to then build a big hydrogen production plant next to them as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that at least that seems to be the route that they are taking currently.
Yeah. You mentioned that intermittency of renewable electricity is an input to hydrogen production, therefore also your ammonia production process. So how are you planning to tackle this challenge?
So one option is, of course, to use hydrogen storage, implement that into the process. And that is also the option that we are exploring. And there, again, it's the question about the balance. So how big the storage should be, as it's not that cheap option. And the investment is already quite big. So the storage, adding that, is, of course, increasing the investment, but eventually also the cost of ammonia. And as we are having the offtake discussions, every euro on the cost of ammonia is, of course, quite significant. So it's finding a balance of how big the storage should be.
Okay. You said that your plant is small-ish for ammonia production, and then it's big for the hydrogen production currently. But what's the scale of the investment then? Kind of inferred that it's big. But what kind of things are we discussing and what implication that have for example, for the investments that need to be made?
Yeah, so with our plant, depending a little bit, are we talking about the full scale or the half scale scope? So it's somewhere up from 500 million euros. So it's quite a lot of money. And of course, since we are a small startup, we need outside investment. And actually, we were able to find a funding partner a little over a year ago. So we have a French infra investor, Meridiam, on board. However, of course, this is also a learning for them, because they are used to investing in projects that have actual pull. So they are very big with this public-private partnerships. So there is some need from the public side. So, for example, a road or a school that they are then fitting their project to. However, now that we have to sell this product to the customers, so there is this market formation risk, which is a little bit new for them. And of course, the upfront CapEx is a huge investment that they need to make. And we need to find the offtake partner who is also willing to take a little bit of the risk to commit to a certain price at this point, even though they don't know what it will be in the future. So a lot of players need to come together. And then there's, of course, this classic chicken and egg situation, like with, I guess, in many types of development. So who is willing to take the risk and take the first steps in order to make this happen?
And from the business or economic perspective, it's then more about the question of regulation, changing the equation for the customers.
Yeah, regulation, so that it would actually be financially feasible to pay the green premium, but also these first industrial scale projects would use also the grants. For example, in EU, we are applying for the EU Innovation Fund grant, which is one big part of making the financials work in these first-of-a-kind projects.
Lastly, well, we discussed a few challenges related to green ammonia production here. Why this transition to green ammonia matters, and what makes you hopeful that we can achieve that?
Yes. So basically, the food security is the one big issue. And what's going on currently in the world, I think it's important that we try to minimize the important dependency and try to be self-sufficient here within Europe with such a critical raw material to our food security. And of course, the climate impact. So like I said, it's ammonia production is comparable to the flight emissions. So it's quite huge impact that we could be making with this green ammonia production. And also thirdly, thinking about this just transition and regional renewal. So when we want to actually decarbonize some industries or do these kind of new processes, I think it's important that we try to do it locally so we get the learnings here and not just go by our old ways and import a raw material when the knowledge and production and even the production of the end products are going somewhere else. So I think those three are quite important topics.
Thank you for the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast. In the next episode, I discuss how sector integrations can help improve green hydrogen business cases and what hydrogen valleys have to do with this.
Please subscribe, rate and share the podcast. It helps others find the show as well, and you get more bang for your tax euros. We gratefully acknowledge the financial support from the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University for the production of this podcast. Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project in turn is co-funded by the European Union through the Clean Hydrogen Partnership and its members. The podcast tune song is Limit 70 by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. This episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast was scripted, recorded, edited, mixed, and hosted by me, Mikko Heiskala. Till next time.